Hey, this episode of Walking the Floor is made possible with support from Fender Play. Have you or someone you know been looking to learn how to play guitar? Well, my friends over at Fender recently introduced Fender Play, the complete learning platform from the most trusted name in guitar. Offering on-demand guitar lessons through a video-based platform that's designed to help you play your favorite songs and learn key skills in minutes. For your free trial of Fender Play, please visit fender.com/walkingthefloor. Let's go.
Hey, this is Sam Morrow, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores. And senoritas. This is your old pal Chris Shiflett, and you are, of course, listening to another fine edition of Walking the Floor, America's favorite podcast, coming to you live. Well, not live, coming to you pre-recorded from Mar Vista, California. I've covered a lot of ground since our last episode, doing solo gigs and whatnot, and as you probably know, the Foo Fighter tour ended. So I've been enjoying a little civilian life, working my way back into civilian life. It's the day after Halloween. I feel kind of ill. I think I ate way too much candy yesterday. I have like a sugar hangover, and I'm all sore because I surfed Oceanside in the morning with some friends and my son and exercised muscles I haven't used in a while. God damn. I got some gigs this weekend up in Ojai and Carp with Timmy Curran. Johnny Two Bags from Social D and Jamie Wyatt. But by the time you hear this, that'll all be over, man. That'll be gone. That'll be in the rearview mirror. But don't you fear, because there's more coming. Texans unite and come out to our shows down there. I'm opening up for my good buddy Paul Cawthon next weekend and the weekend after that. We're going to be hitting like Dallas, Houston. I'm doing a one-off show with Dale Watson and right around San Antonio. Then we're going to be doing some more with Paul Cawthon in Austin. And where's the last one? New Braunfels. That's what it is. New Braunfels. So get your tickets. Go to chrisshiflettmusic.com and check it out. And there'll be more to come. I got a big announcement coming soon. Maybe even by the next Walking the Floor episode. More announcements. So I've been working hard with my team, putting together loads and loads of tour dates for next year. So stay tuned. It's coming. The news is coming. Okay, everybody, just again, a big thanks to everybody at Fender Play for helping to make this episode of Walking the Floor absolutely free every week. Fender Play is the complete learning platform from the most trusted name in guitar, available on desktop and mobile, so you can learn anytime, anywhere. And it's the quickest and easiest way to learn how to play the guitar, the bass, the ukulele, whatever you want. With bite-sized video lessons featuring hundreds of top songs and classic favorites of all genres. They got all genres over there. You can learn anything you want. So get on over for your free trial of Fender Play to fender.com/walkingthefloor. And support for Walking the Floor also comes from D'Addario. D'Addario, a fine maker of USA-made instrument strings and musical accessories, is committed to sustainability through the Playback Program, recycling over 1 million used instrument strings. For more information on the Playback Program and how to help in its mission of reaching 2.5 million strings in 2018, visit playback.daddario.com. And let's not forget our good friends over at Zounds.com, where you get all of your gear needs right there on the interwebs. Zounds.com. They got free shipping on every single order, no exceptions, no exclusions, and most of those orders, they get to where you are within 2 days. So get on over to Zounds.com, and we're going to get on over to the interview. All right, this week's guest, Sam Morrow, is an interesting, cool dude. I'm kind of surprised that I haven't met this guy before because we have a lot of friends in common, even people that we've played with in common. He is out of Texas originally, took a brief detour to New York City, and eventually made his way out to Los Angeles, where he told me that music wasn't even really the focus of why he moved out here, but he eventually found himself in the L.A. Americana music scene, playing places like the Grand Ole Echo and Love Song, and eventually getting a record deal with a local label here called 40 Below, and started putting out records and hitting the road and doing the whole thing. From screamo to hip hop to Jesus Christ calling him to music to sobriety, this is Sam Morrow on Walking the Floor. Oh, baby, won't you give me
the quick fix? Oh, baby, it's the only way. Yeah, I moved to the valley now, so.
Oh, okay.
Sherman Oaks now.
So. Oh, I lived in Sherman Oaks.
I like it out there, man.
Yeah, lived on. I was right off of Woodman.
Oh yeah,
but I wasn't on. I was on Matilia or something.
Pretty
I
much where I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like Moore Park and Hazeltine, so okay. Right there, like next to Woodman,
hanging out at the Galleria.
That's what I do. That's where I spend my time.
Yeah. Since we're talking about where we live and all that, I'm recording, so we can just jump in.
Oh,
this.
Cool.
Hopefully you don't mind that's going to be out there in the world.
Like, no, it's
state
okay.
Your address clearly, home phone number.
1-4-0-4.
If anybody wants to call
0-4.
Sam. Yeah. Oh, you know, I'm going to turn my phone off real quick.
I'll do the same thing.
When did you move out here? You said you lived in Venice for like 7 years. How long you been out here?
Yeah, so I've been out here, I guess I lived in Venice for more like 6 years.
Right.
I've been out here for like 7 years.
Okay. Well, you must have moved out here pretty young because you seem pretty young right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm 27 right now.
Okay.
So I moved out here when I was 20. Yeah,
that's math there. Simple math.
Yeah.
What? Why L.A. and not Nashville? Or why not just, why not Austin? Or where are you from in Texas?
I grew up in Houston.
Okay.
And I lived in Austin for a little bit.
Right. There just seems like there's other, hubs of country Americana stuff that are more happening than LA.
That wasn't like what my move was based on.
Okay.
Music, I when I moved, I kind of used being a musician as like a reason to not have a real job.
Don't we all?
Yeah. And I wasn't really like, that wasn't my focus really,
Oh, really?
My focus was just partying and getting really high,
Were you already playing music at that point?
Yeah, I've been playing since I was young.
Okay.
And then, I moved out of my parents and like I went to college.
Right.
But never really went to classes and
right.
Just an excuse to get out of the house, and continue my partying career, And, I kind of played, every once in a while in Austin, but, I wasn't, part of the scene or anything.
Were you in bands?
A little bit, yeah. I was in more bands when I was younger. Like, I kind of grew up playing in churches and stuff like that, and then, which is, pretty apropos for the South,
Sure.
Then I kind of got into, the emo, screamo kind of thing, was in a
finally
couple of
an Americana artist that has some punk rock roots, because I feel in the old days of Americana everybody came out of rock and roll and punk rock specifically, you know what I mean, and now I interview people, nobody comes from that.
I'm so happy to meet somebody that came out of that world. I wasn't so much punk,
right.
I listened to a little bit of it, but just the really emo Spill Canvas and screamo stuff like Our Last Night, Memphis Mayfire.
Okay.
Devil Wears Prada.
Emo starts stops for me at Jawbreaker. So I don't know anything beyond that.
Jawbreaker too. Yeah. One of my best friends has a Jawbreaker tattoo. Yeah.
And I don't mean that because I don't like the stuff that came after. I mean, just mean that was the last time I was sort of paying attention.
It wouldn't offend me if you didn't like it.
Right. Yeah. No, we have to like the same stuff.
No, it's so I went through all of that, and then being from Houston too, kind of was a rap fan, Screwed Up Click and Lil Flip and all those dudes.
Right.
We used to always listen, roll around on Sundays and a bunch of white kids sip and drink, listening to 95.7, listening to Chopped Up, Not Slopped Up Sundays, It was weird, you know, but that's what I did.
I don't know any of those references you just made, but I have a 15-year-old son who's, I think, going down that road.
Yeah, I mean, it's a road, you know? It's not that I, like, went down that road. And then I also went down the road of, like, oh, I want to be an EDM producer.
Right.
But I think it was really, I just liked going to raves and doing drugs, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I went down that road too. And like, I moved out here basically like pulling a geographic to like, you know, try and clean up. And it just seemed like a good place. I tried to go to New York City and I just felt claustrophobic and weird there. It just wasn't for me, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of got worse when I moved there, and then I moved back out here. And
like, what was your thing? What were you trying to
do? I was a junkie. Yeah.
A junkie.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I kind of did anything under the sun. You know? So I moved out here, and it kind of coincided with cleaning up a little bit. And that's when I really kind of got into music. And well, I was into music before, but like got serious about it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like started really writing songs and, kind of trying to discover really what I wanted to do musically.
What were you drawing from, like, influence wise at that point?
I just started gravitating towards honesty, you know, like raw sort of honest stuff. So, and that gravitated me towards like folk, you know, like really raw songwriting kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I got kind of really into Towns and, like David Ramirez, who's like an artist that's new, not new artist, but a Texas guy.
Yeah.
And then that's sort of like, you know, so I started playing the sort of sad bastard stuff. And that kind of helped me get to, a point where I was, you know, I was playing like in all these bars around the country, all this weird sad bastard stuff, and people were like eating their pizza, and it just wasn't like relating, you know.
How did you start? So you were touring?
Pretty early on. So I started touring maybe like 5 years ago.
With management and a booking agent and all that sort of stuff?
I was just kind of like hitting the road. I mean, I had my first record I put out on a label, the same label I'm on right now. It's called 40 Below. And this guy, Eric Korn, produced it. He's produced all three of my records, the president of the label, etc.
Where are they based out of? Here in LA?
Here in LA. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a small, like, you know, producer label kind of thing, but it's been cool to like kind of see it grow. You know?
Made a record before you hit the road?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. So
yeah.
What led to you? How'd you wind up? How'd you go from sort of part-time musician, partier to a record deal? There must have been something in between around town.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I guess I kind of skipped that, but yeah. So I didn't really have anything to do when I moved out here, so I went to Musicians Institute. And I didn't like it.
Right.
Like, I was only there for like 6 months, but I met a lot.
I knew many people that went to Musicians Institute as a way to like sort of tell their parents, I am going to college.
Yeah, I'm doing something.
You know,
yeah,
I'm doing something.
And it was to tell myself that too.
Right,
like,
sure.
I'm not just like sitting around, you know?
Yeah. Did you pick up some theory and some chops and stuff like
that?
Yeah,
a little bit, like recording techniques and stuff like that. It's changed a lot
over the years, right? Well, whereas before, the knock on Musicians Institute was that it was like cranking out Yngwie Malmsteen's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's not what it is now.
It is a lot of that though.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's a lot of the reason that I didn't relate to a lot of the people there.
Right.
And, like,
right,
what I wanted to do musically and, like, where I was going musically. But I did meet Eric there. He was one of my teachers, and I guess he just kind of saw something in me. And so we did a record together. And, you know, in the meantime, I was kind of playing around town. As much as I hate playing around LA, I was just kind of doing it anyways, you know.
It's funny, you know, I mean, I've lived here on and off for a long time,
yeah,
and grew up not too far away, and LA was the place we came to show. So I've been around the music world for a long time here, but nowadays, you know, I'm like a middle-aged guy with kids, and I live far away from the nightlife and never get over there, and so I feel pretty disconnected from it, even though, yeah, I got some friends, you know, in and around the sort of Americana world of LA. But what can you talk a little bit about, like, what what is that world? Where does it center around? Who are your peers? Like, is it the Grand Ole Echo kind of that scene?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I first started, like, when you don't know anybody in LA, it's like you get a lot of the pay-to-play stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just a struggle to figure out where to play in LA, what rooms are good. And
sure.
Because there's so many places, and so many of them are awful.
Right.
You know? Right. So it's a struggle to, like, figure out, you know, you feel like you need to play, like, 3 shows a week around LA just to figure out, like, which venues are good and stuff like that. But
what are the ones that you liked?
Man, it's a struggle to even figure that out right now. I know the ones that I like now. I mean, like, I love the Grand Ole Echo people and, like, Love Song, which just opened, like, a few years ago.
Love Song.
Yeah.
It's
connected to the Regent.
Okay.
Which is downtown.
And does that have a sort of built-in scene? Room.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, like, Spaceland books it now. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, like, a bunch of music industry stuff.
No, it's good.
Yeah,
people love a deep dive into that stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's Spaceland books it now.
You played all the clubs that suck so that some kid out there listening to this interview doesn't have to.
If you want
to
know where not to play in LA, hit me up. Yeah. Love Song is great. Like, and they're kind of, I was one of the first people to kind of, like, start playing music there. Like, for a while, I think they didn't really know who they were. And I did with doing a residency there for a while. And
yeah, cool.
Now, like, last week, Jim Lauderdale played there. Like, and it's just this, like, tiny bar with not really a stage. Just kind of like a let's move some chairs kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's a great place. And, you know, I say LA is horrible to play, but the best way to play LA is if you're coming through on tour.
Right. It's a tough town.
It's really tough.
It's really tough to get people to come out to shows here.
Yeah, it kind of has to be like the hip thing to do that night. And there's a lot of hip shit to do in LA. So, but, like, I just did this tour with Paul Cawthon for, like, a few weeks. I just got back and we did a show at the Moroccan, and it was one of the most fun shows I've ever played in my life.
Wait, where's the Moroccan?
It's downtown.
Okay.
It used to be something else, which I don't remember the name of it now.
Yeah,
I didn't even go to that last place. But I think, like, maybe 2 years ago, they turned it into the Moroccan.
Okay.
And it was awesome, man. And it was packed and really fun. And so you can't play good shows in L.A.
You were on that tour when he got all his gear
stolen. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
We weren't like staying at the same hotel as them, but
right. I believe I was told that it's the same hotel.
It's Aaron Lee Tashin.
Yes. Yeah. That is sketch.
Yeah, I mean,
That is really, like, for a touring musician, that's like your worst nightmare.
Yeah, that's
to walk
nightmare.
Out in the morning and see all your shit's gone.
Well, and theirs got stolen, like, mid morning.
Right.
Like, it was like, I think they'd already been to the van, and it was like 9:30 in the morning and someone just drove away with it, but they did get the van back and the trailer with, like, nothing in it.
What'd they do after that, though, for gear? Were you guys just
sharing? Yeah, they used our gear. And then Fender was really cool, and they hooked him up with, like, a bunch of new stuff whenever we came to L.A.
Nice.
But, yeah, they were just using our drums and, you know, a bass amp and all of that stuff, all of our backline, you know. So it ended up working out, but... Yeah. I mean, Paul had, like, a guitar that, like, his grandfather gave him, and, you know, stuff that has a lot of sentimental value.
Sure,
so.
Sure.
And they arrested the guy, too. So.
Oh, they found the guy.
Yeah, but they haven't, as far as I know, they still haven't really gotten much back.
Oh, yeah. It was probably pawned off by 10 o'clock that morning.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I think they found, like, some of the cymbals, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, they haven't found, like, anything else, which is a bummer.
Awful.
So hopefully, and the thing is, you know, like, if someone gets murdered or something like that, they have to reprioritize, you know. So that's kind of what's happened. They're like, oh, we had a homicide, so you know your case is on the back burner.
Probably
now.
Since then, I've been guessing there's been a lot of homicides in the Sacramento area.
Yeah,
that's tough, man. Have you toured with Paul a lot?
No, like, that was the first tour I did with him.
Okay. Who else have you toured with over the years?
I've done a lot of stuff with Jamie Wyatt. We kind of have done, like, some joint tour stuff where we even, like, shared a band. You know, because I've always just kind of, I really like being on the road, and I just like kind of road dogging it for Even well, if you live
in
like
the perfect
cheap
era, because we all have to tour all the time.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's very true. Well, yeah, and like that's where I've gotten like the most traction. Like,
sure,
you know, I get written up in, you know, Rolling Stone or whatever, Noisy, whatever, but, and it's cool, but like, I don't really gain fans from that, you know,
right.
Like I gain fans from playing shows, like going out there and like meeting people. And,
sure.
But I mean, one thing leads to the other, you know, like the Rolling Stone, Noisy leads to better shows and,
right,
you know, better,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
all that
I think
stuff.
It's a bunch of different things happening simultaneously, yeah, that maybe if you're lucky, you get a fan from.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? You got to play the shows. You got to get the write up in the whatever it is. You got to get on some cool playlists. Yeah. You know what I mean? Maybe get your song on Outlaw Country. What? It's got to be all those things have to happen. And then maybe somebody goes and like actually checks out your music.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly, man. Yeah. Exactly. It's just like, I mean, my manager, like, just pounds into me like how much every little thing means, you know, because I get like, why the hell am I going to this radio thing in fucking bumfuck Oklahoma at 7 a.m you know, and I'm not even playing a show in Oklahoma,
right?
And he's like, well, blah 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 blah, this is why, you know. So
I've had that debate so many times with people where I'm like, look, the radio station isn't playing my fucking song.
Yeah.
And they're never going to play. We all know they're never going to play my song.
Yeah.
So why am I wrecking my sleep and fucking my voice up?
Yeah.
To go in to answer
and
questions.
And like pissing the band off too.
Right. You know? Yeah. I mean, I'm so with you there, dude. Like the going into the radio station has never turned like, you know, we did 40 pre-sale and I went into the radio station and 500 people showed up that night. It has never happened.
Yeah. The radio's tough. I mean, like we got to top 10 on the Americana charts with this record, which is great.
Is this what, would you say that this record is getting traction in a way that your first couple?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. But like I said, like we got to top 10, but like, I still don't really know what that means.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, like it's better than not being there, but it's not like I'm playing these fucking sold out shows.
Wait. Let me get this straight. Like, you were in the top 10 and you didn't that day go to the Lamborghini dealership?
I know. It's crazy, man. It's not the 90s anymore with Billy Corgan, like, you know, getting to the number one hit and going straight to the Lamborghini dealership.
Tell me about it. You know? Nobody's more aware of that than me, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I'm young, so like, this is the industry that I know.
Yeah.
You know, like obviously I hear stories and
there's a lot more money in record labels now than there has been in a long time.
Well, yeah.
Thanks to streaming.
Yeah.
So hopefully at some point.
But the labels are making it all.
No, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. That's not being passed on to the artist.
Yeah.
But at some point, hopefully, you know, that'll. Artists will stand up and go, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, hopefully it evens itself out a little bit. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like we've gone back to like, it's like the 1950s and it's all singles. And we're all getting fucked.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gone back to those days.
I think like anything, it'll hit a breaking point again. And
yeah.
Things just evolve and change. You know,
yeah.
It has to be figured out. Yeah. I don't even pretend to have the answers. I'm just going to keep like playing shows and trusting other people a little bit, you know.
You mentioned the name of the guy that owns your label and has produced your records. What did you say his name was again?
Eric Korn.
Okay. So tell me about your latest record. And working with him.
Yeah, so Concrete and Mud is the title of the latest record. My first two records I kind of did like a year apart. And I don't think it gave me enough time to kind of do research and like figure out what I wanted to do or even kind of how to get down onto tape or Pro Tools, like what's going on in my head, you know?
Right.
But I think that those two, although I like them as individual records, I think that they were like sort of learning experiences for me.
Yeah.
This one, I spent like 2.5 years just kind of doing research, like listening to different bands or bands that I hadn't listened to in a while and listening to like the bands that influenced them.
But in terms of like research on production styles and sounds and things like that?
I mean, I say research, you know, just listening to anything like production styles or songwriting or or just listening to different sounds that I wasn't familiar with.
Great. I love doing that. I love sitting down and listening to a song that and just going like, why does this make me want to break shit right now? Like, what is it? What is the specific thing in here that's doing that, you know?
Yeah, and I think that I never looked at songs like that before I started making records, you know? I didn't listen to the production. Yeah. You know, and even now, like, I don't know. After this record, I learned more on this record too, but like coming into this record, I just kind of would describe stuff, but by how it made me feel. Like, you know, there's a guitar part on a song on there called Quick Fix, and I was trying to describe to Eric, like, yeah, I want it to feel like you're trapped in a box and like trying to get out of the box. Like, that's how I was like trying to describe how I wanted it to sound. And he's just like, all right, man. Yeah. Like, but turns out that means like three different types of compression and a phaser, you know?
Right.
Now I kind of know more about that stuff, and I think it's cool. Like, I'm more interested in that stuff now.
Yeah. Like, who are some of the influences maybe that crept into this record that you were listening to at the time?
Yeah, I listened to a lot of Little Feat.
Oh, cool. That's
probably one of my favorite bands of all time. And even like, there was the first Robert Palmer record, who's the Addicted to Love guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was like The Meters playing, and Lowell George produced that record.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, awesome. I've never heard that, man. Wow.
It's awesome. They're like, the first three songs are just a medley. First one's a Little Feat song, and then the other two are, I think, just like Robert Palmer songs. And then I listened, like, kind of dove kind of headfirst into a lot of Skynyrd stuff. Like, it's easy to just be like Skynyrd, you know, Freebird.
Ed King died today?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Man, it's really sad. And wow. I just watched that documentary.
Me too.
And he looked the healthiest out of all of them, you know? Like, I would have expected him to die last.
Totally.
Yeah. It kind of blew my mind a little bit.
I know.
Yeah, it's really
sad. I never knew he was a California guy until I watched that documentary.
I didn't know.
Yeah. I've loved Skynyrd's music, and I would say they're a big influence on me, you know? But I didn't know anything about their backstory, you know?
No, I didn't really either. Like, and I think it's really easy to just feel like they're these rednecks from Florida or whatever, but they were... And they said this in the documentary, and I've actually said it in like interviews in the past, like, they're one of the most well rehearsed, like, their arrangements are some of the most ridiculous arrangements you'll ever hear.
Totally.
Like, it's not like this redneck bar band, you know?
Try to play that smell. You're like,
it's crazy.
Fuck, this is like a crazy epic.
Yeah, any of their songs, like, and all of their ideas, like, just taking like a 1-4-5 and just, I don't know, just mixing it up, like mixing up the rhythms and just all their drum breaks and how they're all so together, like, you know.
There were some really interesting parts of that documentary. I thought one of them being, if they were around right now, Ronnie Van Zant would never openly talk about gun control the way he was. I mean, I think that shows you how far culturally we've changed.
Yeah.
You know, that was just like, you know, he's like, get rid of all of them, man. They're fucked up. They're killing everybody where I live, you know, kind of thing.
Like, when you listen to, like, Johnny Van Zant's stuff, like, he's kind of the opposite of Ronnie, you know, like, politically. And
Right.
Because now they have, like, Give Me Back My Bullets and, you know, all these songs that I don't think Ronnie would have related to or written, definitely not written, you know. Like, I don't really like, I wouldn't go see Skynyrd right now, you know.
Well, it's almost like, I mean, and I don't know, I've never seen the sort of modern touring incarnation, but I have to assume it's more of almost like a really good Skynyrd tribute.
Yeah, that's what I would
expect. It's like, what,
too.
One or two of them at this point?
Yeah, that's what I would
expect. Even the guys
too.
That didn't pass away in the plane crash, most of them are, I think, passed away.
Yeah,
too, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, I wouldn't. The same with Little Feat. Like, I would have no desire to go see them without
Lowell. Is that the same kind of deal?
Well, no, it's just Lowell. Lowell died of an OD, like, in probably, I don't know what year it was, like, maybe mid-80s, something like that. And they're all Topanga guys. So
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, Lowell and
Richie Havens, which is their drummer. They all played in Frank Zappa's band, which is, I can't remember the name of it now.
It's the Mothers of Invention.
Yeah, Mothers of Invention. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Frank Zappa like convinced Lowell, like, dude, you should start your own band.
Oh, wow. Know?
And that's how Little Feat got started.
Really?
So I those never are all that. LA, like, California guys.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're not really, like, they're more, their influence is more like, I guess, New Orleans and, you know, rock kind of country, but yeah, not really like California country kind of thing.
Right. Are you into any of the California country stuff?
Yeah, I mean,
like, and I don't mean like the bit. Eagles kind of thing, but I mean more like, you know, the sort of like Bakersfield sound.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I listen to Buck and Merle and
sure.
Yeah, but I'm not like, I wouldn't say it's like my favorite thing, you
right.
know. Like,
yeah, right.
I kind of get like lumped into being a country artist, which I do play country tunes and like there's sure. country cuts on the record.
Yeah.
But that's not like all I listen to or right. anything like that. And I didn't like country music for a really long time.
Right.
You know, just being from Texas, and I kind of had this like punk rock attitude where everyone around me likes country, fuck country.
Right,
you know?
Right. That's how I felt growing up, because I grew up in Santa Barbara, you know, yeah. a little bit north here. That's how I felt, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. Like, everything was hippie stuff and reggae.
Yeah.
So the thing that I hated more than anything else in the world was, like, the Grateful Dead and,
yeah.
and reggae. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I've sort of, as an adult, I've come to be okay with that stuff.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? Grateful Dead's still tough for me, but
I've just
there's a couple of those records I dig.
I've like kind of just started, like, even this last tour, like, I kind of made a concerted effort to, like, I'm going to listen to a bunch of Grateful Dead records this,
right.
this tour.
And did you watch that documentary series?
No.
It's on Amazon Prime, I think, and it's really
good. I'll have to check that out.
Really good.
Yeah, I mean, I just, the harmonies are just tough for me, man.
Yeah.
And I was talking to, you know, Brian Whelan.
Very yeah, well. Yeah, 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 I love Brian.
So, he did the last tour with me, and he's about to do this tour with me.
Oh, cool. What, playing guitar with you?
Yeah, playing guitar.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude, he's so good.
He's a monster.
So yeah. good. And he's all
a really
around
good
monster.
Dude. Yeah,
all
around. Yeah.
Guitar playing monster, keyboard monster,
yeah.
singing monster, songwriter monster. That
yeah,
guy's like,
he's
got the whole
insane.
Thing.
Yeah, but we were just talking about, like, how oftentimes we can't get past the harmonies. Like, they're just so bad on a lot of those records, you know? Like, I like probably like the early, my drummer Matt was like, you should listen to the early 80s stuff. That's kind of when the drugs were working the right amount, you know?
Right.
And so I think that's kind of what I've sort of gravitated more is like that kind of era of the
okay.
Dead, but yeah, I'm still working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Still work in progress.
Yeah.
I'm not walking around a parking lot somewhere going, like, I need a miracle.
Yeah.
No. But I can dig some of it. You know, it's all right. All right. You mentioned, you know, partying and drug use and all that sort of stuff. And given all the stuff that we've talked about, you know, touring a ton, you know, kind of road dogging it nowadays, is that hard? Is that a hard thing for you to manage? And I say that, by the way, as somebody that's going on 12 years of sobriety
yeah.
myself. You know?
No, congrats, man.
Not
really. Like, I don't think about it too much anymore.
Right. Was it hard in the beginning?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of had to, like, slowly, you know, dive. At the very beginning, I sort of surrounded myself with, like I was in rehab for 99 days, and then I went to, like, a sober living for, like, 6 months or whatever.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, so I was pretty, like,
really
immersed
took it
in
seriously,
that whole
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, like, I think I understood that it was, like, either that or I was probably going to die. Yeah. You know?
Well, I think one of the hard things in the early period of getting sober, when the sort of euphoria of, like, oh, my God, I got 30 days kind of wears off, is, you know, you've spent your life hanging out with other people that you gravitate towards, other people that are into the same shit as you.
Yeah, sure.
So when you're using and drinking or whatever it is, those are your close friends.
Yeah.
And so that's what's so fucked up about sobriety early on is you can't be around your friends.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And
it's hard for touring because you're kind of touring with your friends. Or everybody knows you a certain way and expects that. And you go to Cincinnati and all your buds show up. Come on, dude. Have a fucking beer. Whatever it is. You know what I mean? That's how it was for me. It's been long enough that it's just life now, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, I think... I don't know. I didn't really have that experience of, like, too much too many people like, hey man, you know, come on, let's have a drink, blah blah blah. Like, I do get that a lot on the road now. Like,
right.
I mean, I play in mostly like small clubs or bars or anywhere with a bar, really.
Yeah.
So, and I play like kind of drinking music. So
sure.
People don't understand, especially just some drunk fan like that wants to buy me a shot. Like, they don't understand. So it's more of like walking that line of like not being rude. For me,
sure,
you know,
sure.
That's like kind of what worries me the most. Not worries me, but yeah, some people just don't understand. It's not that I don't really have the temptation to do it. It's like kind of letting people down easy, I guess.
Right, right.
But yeah, I don't, like I said, I don't really think about it too much, you know. I've got like enough going on to where I just know that I know myself well enough to just be like, I would throw all this shit out the window if I did that right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's that little feeling you always have to keep right there.
Yeah.
You know?
That just sort of like tape that you play back,
right.
I guess. Cause I mean, I've kind of tried everything, you know, tried just doing this or just doing that. And,
right.
For me, it just doesn't work, right? You
right.
know.
Yeah. Stick to coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're doing a partnership with Fender, and specifically
cool.
with they have this thing called Fender Play that's like their online music lesson platform thing. That's an app and it's a website and stuff. So, and we talked about this a little bit. Well, I don't think we talked about this at all, actually. Did you take a lot of lessons growing up? Well, I guess you went to MIT, so that's kind of lessons.
Yeah. So when I went to like an independent artist program there, so it was kind of weird. It was like, I took like a songwriting class, a recording techniques class, took like a vocal class. I honestly never really, like, I was pretty much self-taught, you
know?
And I'm still not like, I just really like got serious about guitar like in the past like 3 years, you know.
Right.
Before
you're more
I
like just focused on singing and writing songs and stuff.
Yeah, before that's kind of what that was what the guitar was
right.
a tool. And now I don't even play acoustic anymore, and like I just play electric. And
well, I mean, why do you think you started playing in the first place? Like, what drew you to it?
Jesus Christ drew me to it. Now.
Really? Oh, that would be the best answer. God damn it.
But really, like, I started, I kind of like figured out that I had an okay voice at some point. And then I started playing in church, and the guitar just kind of came with that, you
right.
know? And I'm super grateful for like church being there, because it gave me an experience of like playing with a band, which a lot of people don't get, you know.
Sure.
And I just,
especially nowadays, I look at my kids, nobody forms bands in high school anymore.
It's not cool
bizarre.
Anymore man
yeah.
It's not cool anymore. Yeah,
will you make it cool again? God damn, it's up to you guys, we're old.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've kind of been like wanting to start a band for a long time, but separate from like the Sam Morrow thing, like
right.
starting like, but it's like kind of not cool in LA at all, you know, like people
really?
In LA, they're like, oh no, I'll just play with this guy and I don't want to be nailed down to this, or I'll
sure.
play with this guy and this guy
sure,
and
sure.
this guy, you know? So that's just a dream of mine.
You know, something I wanted to ask you about, I saw that JD Manis played
yeah.
on your latest record.
Yeah.
How'd you connect with him? I mean, for people listening that don't know, he's a legend, you know?
Yeah, he's...
Legend pedal steel player.
Absurd.
Yeah.
You should have him on, man. He lives
in
Chatsworth or something.
I've
like
emailed
that.
Him about that before,
yeah.
and he was totally down. We just have, you know, we haven't connected yet.
Yeah,
at some point, for sure.
He's a great dude. Eric, my producer, worked at Mad Dog for a long time, which is Dusty Wakeman, who... just kind of knows everyone from that sort of era, Skip Edwards, who was plays organ for that's how he got hooked up with JD was
okay.
just like, he's a producer, he kind of knows this person and this person and this person.
How is it tracking with him? Because, you know, I've had the experience many times of working with people who I look up to, you know,
yeah.
people who I'm a fan of. And it can be awkward sometimes going, you know, actually, instead of doing that, could you do it more like, you know what I mean? Yeah, but you kind of have to do that in those moments sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I think my experience in those moments is not really like directing them, but just kind of being like, all right, let's do another one.
Right.
You know, because like legends like that will just kind of do something totally different.
Right.
And you'll have so many options to pick from.
Yeah.
But yeah, he came in and was just kind of like, we had this kind of quick train song that he played on called Skinny Elvis. And that's Jamie White. I duetted with Jamie White on that. And he was like, well, I can't play that fast anymore. So you might have to bear with me. And then that turned out to just be a blatant lie. Like, if you listen to the solo on that, it's absurd.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, just, I'd never been around a steel player that was that good, you know?
Sure.
And I can't even really say that I was a fan of his without really knowing I was a
fan
of his.
Sure, because he's played on just tons of shit.
Yeah, he's played on everything, and, you know, which now is apparently a really cool record, is Sweethearts of the Rodeo, which didn't used to be a cool record. But
wait, is he on that record?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he's on that record.
I didn't realize that was him.
Yeah, ask him what he thinks about that record when he comes in.
Did he play with them when they did those shows recently?
Because
they did the Sweetheart of the Rodeo shows.
I don't think so, but with the one with Marty and stuff like that.
I don't think
he did. But okay.
Why is he? Does he not think highly of those records?
I'll let him answer.
That's funny.
He just did an all. Him and another guy did an all steel cover record of Sweethearts of the Rodeo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can't remember the other guy's name, but another steel player, I guess.
Steel playing legend.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. You want to play a song?
Yeah, sure.
Great.
Man. Yeah, this song's called Paid by the Mile. If I only had a dime for every line on my face, I'd buy a drink for every fool in this place. Giving you my two cents, tell you all that I've been through. Can you take it or can you leave it? Can you tell me what to do? I'd take my time, I'd go inside. If I only got paid by the mile, if I had a nickel for every song I tried to write, I could have checked every underdog's days in the fight. Yeah, the one thing that I know, I'm hungry every night. You ain't down till it's over, you ain't over till it's right. Well, I'd take my time, I'd go inside. I only got paid by my own. Every night, every show, every dream that comes and goes, every trouble, I just smile. If I only got paid by the mouth, if I only got paid by the mouth. If I had a silver dollar each night I could not sleep, I'd pay the tab of every man that's ever had to face defeat. Yeah, if you ain't got the hook, the world will string you up like bait. Those miles keep on coming, life don't stop in a week. Well, I'd take my time, well, I'd go inside. I only got paid by the mouth. Well, I'd take my time, I'd go inside. If I only got paid by the only got paid by my own.
Yeah, buddy.
Woo!
Thank you for coming down today, dude. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my apathy gets the best of me, and there goes another friend.
All right, that was Sam Morrow on Walking the Floor. Make sure you get on over to walkingthefloor.com because I'm going to put a bunch of cool links up to all the stuff we talked about, and then you can go check out where Sam's on tour and buy his tickets, buy his t-shirts, buy his vinyl. And when you're done with that, get on over to Spotify and follow the Walking the Floor playlist. I will update that before this episode posts, and you can always go back to Spotify, iTunes, wherever it is you get your podcasts and listen to all those old episodes with the guests like Merle Haggard and Dwight Yoakam, Sturgill Simpson, Jason Isbell, and people like that. So check it out. Okay, thanks again to everybody at Fender Play for the support. If any listeners are interested in learning to play guitar without those usual hurdles, check out a free trial of Fender Play by visiting fender.com/walkingthefloor. That's it for this week. I'll see you guys in Texas with Paul Cawthon. Adios, amigos!